qualitative exploration of PrEP acceptability questions, expectations, and concerns among adult MSM in the U.S. Please welcome Dr. Underhill.
Thank you so much. I'll be talking today about a focus group study that I worked on with my co-investigators. Some of my collaborators are here. Dr. Morrow and Dr. Operario are both mentors on my KO1 grant. And they've been really wonderful collaborators here. I have no financial interest to disclose, unfortunately for me. So I'll be talking today a little bit of background information about PrEP for MSM. Dr. Arnold has already provided some very good information about PrEP and the approval of Truvada, and I'll just add to that a little bit. I'll tell you about the objectives of our focus group study, I'll tell you about what we did, and some of the results that I'm sharing with you today are what MSM in Providence, Rhode Island think about what they already know about PrEP, the motivators and barriers that might affect their uptake of PrEP, and their ideas about risk compensation behavior among people who are using PrEP and among their own and about their own behavior if they actually did begin to use it. So MSM in the United States are a priority population for PrEP use. There have been a number of PrEP trials in this population, and the incidence rate of HIV among MSM is about 44 times the rate for men who are not MSM in the United States. So it's obviously a big priority for this group. Oral PrEP may be a cost-effective strategy for reducing HIV among this group, and there have been several good cost-effectiveness studies by Dr. Paltiel and Dr. Desai. Quantitative studies have found low knowledge and low uptake to date. And these have been surveys done at gay pride events, surveys done in community-based samples. But there has been a high willingness to use PrEP, centering somewhere around 72% in all of the different surveys done so far. So despite this willingness to use it and the likelihood that it will be cost-effective, the effectiveness and population-level impact of this new strategy is really going to depend on what people do. It's going to depend on how many people use it, on whether they take it with sufficient adherence to get the full benefits from it, and how these people will be behaving once they do use it. There's been a lot of concerns about risk compensation behavior, which is the idea that people who use a product that protects them will go about taking more behavioral risks because they do feel the sense of security. And there's been a lot of debate about whether this is something we should be worried about PrEP and whether we should not be. So we were trying to shed some light on that from the perspective of these men. Hang on. Here we go. So the goal of this study was to provide an in-depth exploration and an analysis of four different things. We were looking at PrEP knowledge, things that they had heard to date, sources of knowledge, and kind of ways that they wanted to receive this information, any ideas that they had about advertising campaigns and strategies for getting the word out. We looked at factors that influence the acceptability of PrEP, which we defined as the willingness to use it. And that included both psychosocial factors as well as factors intrinsic to the drug itself. We looked at the factors that might be influencing their risk compensation beliefs, whether they thought it was acceptable, whether they thought it was a good idea, a benefit, or whether it was something that worried them. And we were also very interested in our study about how men interpreted information about PrEP efficacy. Because so far as everyone here knows, PrEP has not been deemed to be 100% effective. No study is showing that. And so understanding how men are going to interpret messages about partial efficacy is really important. We ask people to understand so many things in terms of percentages. So understanding how those percentages are interpreted and applied to people's own lives is important. So I won't be presenting those results today, but we're working on a paper with those right now. So qualitative methods, things like focus groups, are really useful for identifying a range of different experiences, of different impressions, which is what we're trying to do in this study. So these data aren't necessarily generalizable, but they are an illustration of many different ways in which people might be thinking now. These focus groups are stage one of a multi-stage study. We're going to follow these up with some individual interviews, development of some instruments to measure willingness to use PrEP and risk compensation intentions. And then at the end, we're going to be doing a small randomized trial of how people understand messages about PrEP efficacy. But right now we're at the very bottom of that ladder doing the focus groups. So we conducted our focus groups between January and June of 2012. So this was after the IPREC study came out by about a year. Some clinical practices had begun prescribing PrEP, but none in Providence, as far as we knew. Some of the word had gotten out through through newspapers, through magazines like PAWS, but this was kind of still at the beginning. This was before Truvada was approved by the FDA for use as PrEP, and kind of before, things are moving very, very quickly. So even in the period since we finished these groups in June, we've seen, you know, big changes in PrEP availability and people who know about it. So we were just on the edge as the FDA was considering PrEP, but hadn't approved it during that time. We conducted 8 2-hour focus group discussions, and in each one of those groups, there were 4 to 6 men who had sex with men. Our inclusion criteria required that the men be over 18, they had to be male, they had to speak English, they had to not know that they were HIV positive, so either negative guys or guys who didn't know their status, and they had to report unprotected anal intercourse in the past 6 months with a man who was HIV positive or of unknown HIV status. So that left at least the possibility of sero non-concordant sex. So what we did, we recruited with a lot of different strategies. Some of our most effective strategies were direct outreach. I actually had the good fortune to start working with a community-based organization in Providence called Project Weber. And they run a support service for men who have sex with men who are engaging in sex work. And they were very keen to bring attention to this population. So we were able to do 3 of our groups exclusively among men who were engaged in transactional sex. And then 5 groups were among MSM in the community who are much more likely to identify as gay and bisexual. So in the discussions, I was the primary moderator for all 8 of the discussions, and I worked with someone else who was taking notes and prompting follow-up questions. We followed a semi-structured agenda, which focused on our 4 topic areas, namely knowledge of PrEP, factors influencing willingness to use it, risk compensation, and beliefs about partial efficacy. After we assessed their current knowledge and understanding, we provided them with some basic information to enable the rest of the discussion. And in that description about PrEP, we talked about the IPREC study. Once the FemPrep study and the partner study came out, we talked about those too. We told them about efficacy, about the side effects that they could be experiencing, the need for adherence, and the fact that efficacy really changed depending on how well people adhered. We talked about viral resistance, or the possibility thereof. And we talked about the need for routine HIV testing to discourage the development of secondary resistance and to make sure that PrEP is still a good idea. So here are a lot of descriptive statistics. I'll only focus on a couple of them. But one of the most interesting things we found was the big difference between the men who were in community groups and the men who were in these sex worker groups. These really are 2 very discrete populations in Providence. And one of the ways that our results were hopefully going to be useful is to bring more attention to services for the sex worker population, because they're really very different from general MSM. We had a pretty wide range of ages, between 21 and 61. The means were very different. The sex working guys were younger. Race was pretty similar, about 75% white in both groups. Education, big difference. Only 5% of the men in the community groups had a high school diploma or less, but 38% did not finish high school in the sex worker groups, and almost very few of them, none of them graduated from college, and very few had gone to college at all. 32% unemployment in the community groups. We had 36% disabled, so this is a pretty disadvantaged sample. Sex workers, we had 63% unemployed. If you look down at the income row there, you'll see that this is a highly disadvantaged population economically. And in terms of health insurance, which is important for the financing and access to PrEP, as well as access to doctors to prescribe it, we'll see that there's some major problems with relying on traditional financing mechanisms to get PrEP out to this group. So a lot of public insurance and a lot of people who are uninsured. Among this group, so this slide more has to do with the sexual risk behaviors. We'll see that more sex workers don't know their status. Fewer of them identify as gay. The range of sex partners in this group was pretty extreme, between 2 and 150. The gender of their sex partners, these sex working guys were more likely to have had sex with both men and women. And down here, the other column that I find very interesting here is sex under the influence of alcohol and drugs. You'll see in the general population of MSM, alcohol was much more likely during sex, whereas in the sex worker groups, it was much more likely to be other drugs. And for most of them, this is how they began engaging in sex work in the first place. So here's some of our results so far. So almost none of these guys in either the community groups or the sex work groups knew anything about PrEP so far. Those that had heard of it had heard a little bit about the IPREC study or had read about it in PAWS. Some of them had friends that were in the IPREC study up in Boston. But almost nobody, none of them had used it, and very few knew any details. There's actually sometimes a sense of anger when I started telling them about PrEP, this idea of why hasn't anyone told us before? Like, why have we been kept in the dark about this? This is so important. This is something that we need. Some of the guys said, you know, we've been through all these HIV education groups and things in jail and things in, you know, in the clinics, and nobody seems to tell us anything about this. So there's a real desire for information. Two of the guys had used PEP so far, and they identified a lot of potential benefits, both for them personally and for the community, if PrEP actually became accessible to them. For partners, they talked about increased intimacy, increased sexual fulfillment, if it was possible to have sex without a condom with still reduced risk. They said that maybe it would affect the acceptance of people living with HIV in the MSM community, that people wouldn't be afraid to partner with them, that they might be better included in the group. And the potential for decreased fear associated with HIV. And I've got a quote here from someone thinking that PrEP would be particularly appropriate for people who have a lot of paranoia about acquiring HIV. So there were a number of factors that made men interested in using PrEP for their own purposes. The most important one was when men recognized that they were at high risk for HIV. And this was in both the community group and the sex working group. The guys that came in with a heightened awareness of their risk were much more likely to say that they would use it despite the side effects and despite the need to adhere on a daily basis. And some of these quotes here really reflect this recognition that the behaviors that they're engaging in right now are going to elevate their risk. Some of them saw a potential benefit for their own partnerships. We have one participant here who wanted to partner with a man who had HIV and really felt that the need to use condoms in that partnership was problematic for creating intimacy among them. Some of them were concerned that their partners might cheat on them and PrEP would be good for that purpose. The people that had a lot of fear related to HIV reported anticipating benefits for their mental health. And for just their general stress level, both in general and when they were having sex. And there were perceived mental health benefits, with some guys saying that this might empower them. If they had this, they would feel like they were doing something for their health, and that this might have, you know, positive effects in other aspects of their life. Some things that may deter these guys from using PrEP, one of the primary ones was HIV fatalism. If guys thought that they were already, you know, destined to get HIV or not to get it, they were much less likely to be willing to take this step to protect themselves. Some of them, and actually this was very common, one of the biggest questions that I got during the group was whether PrEP would work with the use of alcohol or with the use of other drugs. And a lot of them actually assumed that PrEP wouldn't work if you were drinking while you were using it. So they talked about how they wouldn't take it during nights when they were going out to the club or on special holidays or things like that because they wanted to drink. So that is going to be a really crucial part of educating men about using PrEP and counseling them while they're using it. Some of them did anticipate side effects, and side effects did matter a lot when we talked about them, particularly the bone density and potential for renal effects. That did bother guys. Some of them anticipated some stress about adherence. There's one participant here who said that you're just replacing the worry about HIV with the worry that you have to take this pill every day, because what's going to happen to you if you don't? So really instructing people about the consequences of good adherence and bad adherence, and helping them understand that if they don't adhere, nothing bad will happen to them physiologically, but the pills won't work as well. It's a nuanced point to tell people about. Some were worried about having to hide PrEP from others. There was one guy that just wouldn't use it because he didn't want to hide it from his girlfriend. And there was a lot of concern about this incomplete efficacy of PrEP. They identified a lot of different barriers to PrEP use, and this was particularly the case for the sex work groups. A lot of them they flat out could not afford this. There is no way that these guys are going to be able to pay out of pocket for the pills or for any of the supporting services. And a lot of these guys said, you know, this was a real revelation to me that for these sex work guys, the periods during which they are at most risk for HIV are the periods during which their addiction is the most severe. So any extra money that they're obtaining during these phases, these kind of episodes of high risk, that extra money is not going to be going to HIV medication. And they just told me this flat out, that their priorities are not in place during that time. So anything that requires out-of-pocket financing would be a problem. Access to providers, and particularly MSM-friendly providers, was a problem. There was also a lot of difficulty disclosing HIV risk in order to get the drugs at all. The barriers that we thought might be important, things like the need for repeat HIV testing or the potential long-term use, it really didn't seem to be as much of an issue for these guys. There were also some concerns about whether they could verify whether PrEP was working. Can they test my blood to see if it's in there? Can they test me to see if it's working? There was a lot of desire for certainty once they were able to start using it. So a lot of them predicted that other people would increase their risk-taking, would engage in some degree of risk compensation behavior. For some of them, this was scary because it could lead to, you know, if not HIV, maybe something else, maybe other STIs are going to be on the rise. And some of them were saying that PrEP actually wouldn't affect anyone's behavior, that people pretty much have as much sex as they want to have, and that introducing something like PrEP really isn't going to make much difference. So, yeah. But then when you ask them about what they would personally do if they were able to get PrEP, some of their answers changed. Most of them, although they thought that other people would increase their risk-taking, a lot of them thought that they wouldn't actually do that, that they would just, you know, as this man said, that he would just have a better shot of not dying of HIV, but nothing else would change. And then some of the sex work guys pointed out that because the risk behavior was already maximally high, that introducing PrEP, there's no place for it to go. It's already at the ceiling. So risk compensation is not a problem for these guys. But other men did tell me that they might take more risks, they might have more partners, they might try different types of behaviors when they're using sex. And one of the men even spontaneously brought up that he would share needles more, even though we hadn't been talking about needles at all during the discussion. So there's a lot of different types of risks that might be involved here. So here's some of the things that we're concluding now and that we're following up on in our individual interviews. We found really a range of different motivations, deterring factors, anticipated benefits, both personal and for the community, and perceived risks of using PrEP. So this is not a homogenous group. There's going to need to be the potential for tailoring supportive interventions to address men in a range of different situations. So education efforts should particularly think about interactions with alcohol and drugs and really getting those messages out there. Talking about efficacy in ways that people can understand and really compare to other types of HIV prevention strategies. Because a lot of these men did ask questions about how PrEP would compare to other things. The impact of non-adherence and concerns more generally about medications. Some of the interventions will need to adapt to a lot of personal contexts. The primary barriers to use, which is probably not going to surprise anyone, are systematic access problems, financing, and getting the prescriptions that they need. And this is, as I mentioned, the episodic nature of HIV risk is going to be a really interesting factor at play in determining when and how to get access. And concerns about efficacy and stigma were really important, and often they were more important than the potential burdens of adherence and HIV testing requirements. So that's what we found so far. So I'm very grateful to the men who participated in the study and my mentors and Project Weber. And that's it. So thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.